Welcome, and my name is Peter Woodbury, and this is Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. Today we have a special guest, Echo Bodine. She's a psychic, author, and spiritual teacher. She's the director of the Center for Spiritual Development, where she teaches psychic development and spiritual healing. She's a frequent speaker here in Virginia Beach for the ARE and in the field. She's been on numerous TV shows, including The Today Show, A&E, and she's hosted her own cable TV show. So, without further ado, let's bring on the energetic and enthusiastic Echo Bodine. Years ago.
I think it was a couple years, yeah.
Yeah, and you'll be back soon, so we're all looking forward to that. So my first question I never got to ask you, is Echo your, door is opening. Is that spirit?
That's the cat.
Oh, look, the door.
She does not like to be shut out. Let me
see. Yeah, that's a cat. Oh, yeah.
She's in. Oh, she's in now. So, yeah. And then in a while, she'll want to go back out, but she'll just have to be patient.
Yeah.
Yes, Peter. My birth name is Echo Lee Bodine.
And then how did your parents, or how did you get that name?
Well, my mom, you know what? There's not much of a story about it. My mom grew up with a girl named Echo, and she just liked it.
She liked it.
And, yeah. And then what was interesting, though, was my dad had read a story about when he was younger about a girl named Echo. And so he, on his own, decided that he wanted to name his first daughter Echo. So then they come together, and it was just like, wow.
Oh, that's great. That's a neat story. Yeah. And Echo has such a spiritual context to it, you know, because I think in life we put something out and then we see what spirit brings back. So that's a neat. Have you liked having that name?
You know what? I like it now. I didn't like it when I was little. Oh. I just wanted to be like a Debbie or a Snoopy or a Barbie.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, Mom, why do I have to have this goofy name?
Yeah.
But then as I got older, now I appreciate it. I like it. Yeah,
good. Good. So let's start with you started becoming aware or somehow did your psychic abilities come to prominence as a teenager, or had you had them less so through earlier in your life? How did they come into your awareness?
Well, Peter, it's an interesting story because, I mean, looking back now at my life, I can say, wow, I had these abilities my whole life, but I really was not aware of what psychic abilities were. And we had a really unusual experience in my family.
Mm-hmm.
One night, my brother, I was 17, he was 14. And then I had another brother, another sister, mom and dad. We're all sitting around the dinner table. And my brother would go downstairs and practice on his drum set after dinner. And he was in the beginning stages, so he sounded kind of rough, and he's downstairs and he's just kind of clanking away, and all of a sudden we hear this really nice drumming music coming from the den, and we all stopped and looked at our dad, and he said, I don't know, it must be the record I bought him. And so we just sat there listening to this music. It was really good. And and all of a sudden my brother came flying up the stairs, and he ran in the kitchen and he said, did you hear it? Did you hear it? Did you hear it? And we said, yeah, what was it? And he said, a white figure floated through the door, across the room, put its hands on top of my brother's hands and played the music. And he said, I had my eyes closed and I could still see him. He said, I tried to drop my sticks and I couldn't. And he said, after he played the music, he just floated across the room and out the door. I mean, he was hysterical. I make it sound like he was hysterical. And we were like, what? I mean, this was 1965, okay? People didn't talk like that in 1965. Mm-hmm. You know, we're nice Presbyterian people. We don't talk like this. And so what was cool was that my mom was in a spiritual group at the time, a spiritual prayer group.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the women had mentioned to her that she had been to a psychic. Now, back in 1965, I mean, you had to know somebody who knew a psychic. You know, everything was kind of underground back then. And so my mom called this lady and said, I need the number of that psychic. We just had a weird experience. So my mom calls the psychic. And the psychic says, Mom says, hi, my name is Mabel Dean, and we just had an unusual experience. The psychic says, yes, Mrs. Bodine, I've been expecting your phone call. She says, your son just met his guardian angel, Dr. Fitzgerald. And when he was living on Earth, in one of his lifetimes, he was a drummer. And he's going to teach your son how to play the drums. And she said, this happened for a reason. I need to see you and your oldest daughter for a reading. Mm-hmm. So Mom pretty much said, okay, I'll get back to you on that. I mean, what? And so she hangs up the phone. She tells us what Mrs. Olson says. And we're all like, what? A guardian angel that plays the drums? It's like, this didn't bring any comfort to any of us. We were so freaked out by this.
And how old were you then?
17.
Yeah, I was 17. Was that the first kind of mystical experience that you had?
Yep. 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 And then Mom and I got very curious, like, okay, why does she want to talk to us? Mm-hmm. So we did make an appointment to see her. And oh, Peter, you should have seen us. I mean, really, right now, looking back, it would have been a great piece for comedy because we were so freaked out. Like, what is a psychic? What do they look like? What do they do? Is she going to see all of our secrets? Like, I had secrets at 17, right? Mm-hmm. But still, you know, it's like, what are they? Okay. So we go to her house. She's just an absolute sweetheart. She's from England and has the coolest accent. And she said, Echo, I'm going to read your mother first. So you sit here with Mr. Olson. And I said, okay. And I just sat on that. I was so nervous. I just sat there like a statue. And watch TV with Mr. Olson. And I thought, you know, what is the husband of a psychic like? Oh my God. We had no clue about anything. And Mom went in and she got a reading. And Mrs. Olson told her that she would be a well-known psychic someday. And that my brother, Michael, would be a well-known psychic and write books and be on radio and TV. And she said, my sister, Nikki, would come into her psychic abilities when she was in her 40s, and that I would be a well-known psychic. And she said, you know, I'll tell your daughter more when I see her. Okay.
So this was like from 1 week to the next, all of a sudden everything changed.
Everything changed. And so I went in, Peter, and I sat down with this lady and she had I swear her office was the size of somebody's walk-in closet today. Okay, very tiny little room. We sat down. And Peter, the funny part was she had a glass of water on her little table. And I was so nervous, so I grabbed for the water. And she said, oh, no, 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 dearie. That's for the spirits. And I thought, oh, my God, they're going to drink that water. And because I didn't understand. And then she proceeded to tell me that I was born with all four of the psychic abilities, that I would become a well-known psychic, that I would write books, be on radio and TV. And she said, I was also born with the gift of healing. And she said, all I can tell you about the gift of healing is two things. One, always use hankies underneath your hands when you're channeling healing. And two, don't ever forget that it comes from God. And she said, the rest you'll learn on your own. And so she said, this was another interesting thing, was that she said, your father is at home with a migraine headache, which he was. Mm. And the thing that was interesting about that, Peter, was my dad had a really strong German work ethic, okay? Mm-hmm. You go to work if you're sick. Mm-hmm. There's no excuses, okay? That day, he actually came home from work with a migraine, and he had never even had a migraine before. So wow. When we left for Mrs. Olson, Dad was in bed with a migraine, and Mrs. Olson says, your father's at home with a migraine, go home, put some hankies on his head, put your hands on top of his head, and ask God to heal his headache. Okay, and so the whole way home, Mom and I are saying, why us? What did we do? Why do we have to do this weird stuff? And, and she also said that a teacher would come along and help us. And okay, so about, well, okay, so I go home. I tell Dad what she says. I say, can I put some hankies on your head? And he said, just don't hurt me. And I said, okay. And so I put my hands on Peter. They heated up like little heating pads all by themselves, and they started to tremble a little bit. And I thought, oh my God, what is this? And then they stopped, and I took my hands off, and my dad said, well, I'll be damned if my headache isn't gone. It was like, what? And okay, wow. So that night I went to bed and I'm thinking, okay, so let's see. I'm a healer. So there was Jesus, and then there was Oral Roberts, and now there's me. And so I guess I better quit high school, and I should probably get some robes, because I think healers are supposed to wear robes. And I better start traveling around the world now that I'm the next healer. I mean, that's how limited.
So you really took it to heart. Yeah.
Yes, I did.
You were ready. You were going to sign up.
That's right. So about 6 weeks later, my mom got a phone call from a psychic here in town. She said her name was Bertie Torgerson. She was a spiritualist minister, and she said that her spirit guides gave her the names of 8 people in the Twin Cities, and she is supposed to teach us how to develop our psychic abilities. And she said, your daughter, Echo, and you are on my list. She gave us the address. She said, I expect to see you in class a week from Thursday night, and hung up the phone.
Wow. So you were really recruited.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that, you know what, Peter? I said to my mom, because I was so freaked out, all right, by everything. Because you know what we did? I mean, I think this is kind of typical, although I don't know if it is anymore. But after we came home from Mrs. Olson that night, we, of course, went and bought a Ouija board, because we thought, well, all psychics have Ouija boards, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there was one occult bookstore back here in town. Oh, my God. In about the seediest part of town you could possibly go to. Mm-hmm. And so it was really creepy to go down there. And we bought every Ruth Montgomery and Edgar Casey book if we could find, even though we didn't even know what we were doing. Okay. Mm-hmm. But we just,
this was like 1965, 66?
1965. Wow. Yes. And we just started reading books. And then this woman, Bertie, called. And as it turns out, Bertie was a big Edgar Casey fan too. So she taught us. And we went to her class every Thursday night for about a year.
And so you finished high school, and then you began your mission with doing.
Oh no! Yeah. I did not go willingly. I said to the psychic.
Yeah, that's a tough age, because at 17 you want to.
I know.
You know, you don't want to stand out in a strange way from your peers.
Right. Yeah. That's right. And I told her, I said, I've already been accepted to the University of Minnesota. I'm going to go to the U. I'm going to be a social worker. I am not going to be a psychic. I don't have any of the stuff.
Mm.
But when Bertie started to explain what psychic abilities were, I was listening to her and I was thinking, well, yeah, everybody does that. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets pictures in their head and they come true. Everybody gets thoughts in their head and they come true. Everybody does that.
Mm-hmm.
And, then I started to really think about it, like, well, wait a minute, you know, I've been doing this my whole life, but I never put a name to it. I just assumed everybody was doing that. It was just a part of being human.
And so you graduated from high school, you went to the University of Minnesota, and
did
you graduate? Did you finish?
No, I went for 3 years.
And then,
again, I'm still fighting the whole thing.
Yeah.
But what I was doing was I became a barber for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I was continuing. So it took me 12 years from the time Mrs. Olson talked to us until I finally said, okay, uncle, I surrender. And then I was 29 and I started to do this work full time.
Mm-hmm. Now, your story is that you were kind of awoken or prompted. Now, I know you do a lot of training of helping people develop psychic ability. So how does that work? Do some people have kind of more innate gifts, and then some people can pick them up? How does one learn psychic ability?
You know, I teach the same exercises that Bertie taught us back in the 60s, and they're very effective. And people can, but what I have found is that, like, let's say right now I've got a class of 42 students. All right. Right now on Wednesday nights, I teach a class here in town. So of the 42, I'm seeing about six of them that are really gifted. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, these folks are, mm-hmm. you know, they're going to do this professionally. Mm-hmm. And then I would say there's maybe 12 of them who are saying, I don't even really understand any of this. Okay. They're looking around like, what am I even doing here? And then the other ones in between are people who will use it in their career, like mm-hmm. nurses, realtors, therapists. I get a lot of therapists that they want to develop their gifts so that they can just match up what their client needs, you know, to tune in psychically. And what I finally realized was that the people that are really gifted have used it in other lifetimes. Mm-hmm. And so they come to a class, they know they've got something, they've had experiences, but they can't turn it on and turn it off at will. They mm-hmm. have to learn how to do that. Mm. And so, like I said, out of a class of 42, I would say five or six of these people, there's, I would say five of them are women, and there's one guy that mm-hmm. I think he'll go on to be a psychic also.
Now, how is the has the work of Edgar Cayce influenced you in any particular way, or has he just been somebody that you admired and knew that there are others like you that have these psychic gifts?
What I have to say about Edgar Cayce, first of all, is that when I read his books, they're hard for me to get through. Mm-hmm. And I say that because he was so smart mm-hmm. and the way he talked mm-hmm. was so smart. And, who wrote the book? One of your guys down there.
What was the title? Harmon Breaux or Mark Thurston or John Van Auken or Kevin Tedeschi or.
None of those guys. Who was the first guy you said?
Harmon Breaux. Or
Harmon Breaux.
Mm-hmm. Or Herb Puryear.
Who was that? Yep.
Herb Puryear. Those were the old school writers. No. Or Hugh Lynn.
No, it isn't one of the, I would say Harmon Breaux. That sounds right. And mm-hmm. I think it just says you are psychic. Mm-hmm. And it's this little paperback that I carry with me, like whenever I come down to the beach or anytime.
It might have been maybe Henry Reed or Mark Thurston.
Oh, Henry Reed. Mm-hmm. I've read Henry Reed's books, and I can understand those books. Mm-hmm. He makes it really like, mm-hmm. I get this one. I think it's Reed. I think that's who it
is.
And so I like to quote, like when ARE sends me any place, I like to be able to quote from Cayce, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, Cayce said that intuition is the highest form of psychic abilities.
Yes.
Okay. And just little things like that. You know, I always take that book is in my suitcase. So whenever I go anywhere for ARE, I always just open it up and.
Yeah. So truth is truth.
It's just refreshing, you know.
Yeah. It's so it's kind of like it's helped you kind of validate your own place, the path that you're on. It kind of resonates. Yeah.
Yes.
That's good.
Totally. Totally. Yeah.
Now let's shift a little bit. You have a center for spiritual development, and one of the offerings you have is ghost busting. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, you know, this also started way back when one of my Peter, you'll get a kick out of this. Okay, so the very first ghost busting job I ever went on was with my mom. Uh-huh. We were taking Birdie's classes, and we didn't know what we were doing. And one of my mom's friends called and said, would you come and look in my attic because I keep hearing voices? Oh, okay. So we're on our way out to Carol's place. And I said to my mom, okay, now why are we going to Carol's? And she said, well, honey, she's hearing voices up in the attic. I was driving along. Well, what are we looking for? I don't know, she says. So then I think, wait a minute. Are we looking for a ghost? And she says, well, maybe. And I said, well, what do they look like? And she said, I don't know, honey. And I said, well, okay, what are we going to do if we find one? And she said, I don't know, honey. And so that's as much as we knew when we went on our first ghost busting. And so we go up to Carol's attic. All right, now, Peter, I was raised on Casper. So I'm thinking all ghosts are going to look like little Casper, yeah. You know, the little white guy blobbing around. Okay, so I go up to the attic and I'm looking around for Casper. And I see a family, but they're invisible. Well, it's like I see a man and a woman and a boy and a girl, and they're standing over in the corner of the room, but they're invisible, right? Uh-huh. So I look at my mom, and she's looking at them too. So I said to her, why are those people over there? And she said, I don't know. And I said, well, where's Casper? She said, I don't know. And so we're still looking around for the little white blob, and we don't understand that those are actually the ghosts. And then, so I said to my mom, well, why do you think they just stand there? And I was trying to be really quiet so they wouldn't hear us. And all of a sudden, we hear into our head comes the words, my husband was an alcoholic and a smoker. He passed out, and we all perished in the fire, and he won't let us go to the other side. Okay, all that came into my head and my mom's head. So I said to her, did you just hear that? And she said, uh-huh. So I said, well, what do we do? And so we said, we looked at these people, and we just said, well, you have to go to heaven. Like, oh, boy. And they're like, and so they went through the wall. Okay, so then we think, well, Casper never showed up, so you must not have any ghosts here. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's how stupid we were. Well, I shouldn't say stupid, but.
And you said, yeah, they don't seem to be bothering the family that's living upstairs.
Exactly. So, you know, we just, okay, well, that was easy. And mm-hmm. we went back home. And by the time we got home, Carol called and said, okay, all the voices are back again. So we went back to class and told Bertie, and she said, you know, you need more training before you start doing this stuff. And then what was cool was that it was about, oh, I don't know. I had another experience that didn't go well. And then again, I thought, all right, I'm hanging up this whole looking for ghosts thing. And then one day, one of my students said that she had to move out of her house because there were so many spirits in it, and she was trying to sell it. You had to move out of your house? And she said, oh, yeah, banging on the walls and footsteps and lights and like, what? And so I said, let me call my brother. So I called my brother, Michael, and said, can you see spirits? And he said, yeah. And I said, well, do they scare you? And he said, no. And I said, okay, will you go to this house with me and see if we can see anything? And he said, yeah, why not? And that's really, Peter, that's how it really started. Was we went to this lady's house. Oh my God, there were so many spirits in that house. And what was cool about going with my brother was that, you know, because a spirit, I mean, a ghost, they're just people, but some of them are really light and you can mm-hmm. hardly see them, and then others are stronger. Mm-hmm. And so I would look at one of them and I'd think, and then I'd look at my brother and I'd say, what do you see? And he'd say, oh, there's a woman in a red dress over there. It was like, oh my God, you see that too? And so we were able to validate each other. And that's how the whole thing got started. Was then we asked our guides. By that time, we were communicating with our spirit guides and asking for help. And they were the ones that taught us how to get these folks over to the other side. So that's how the whole thing got started.
So, they're just energies. They're the souls or parts of the soul that is stuck. And then you kind of come in and kind of help midwife them to the higher dimensions.
Exactly. And what we learned from the spirits was, okay, first of all, ask their name. Secondly, ask, well, why are you here? Why won't you go to the light? And you know what, Peter? The number one reason that we have found, and we've been doing this for 25, 30 years, is they're afraid to go to heaven because they're afraid they're going to get sent to hell.
Oh.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And then the second most common reason is they don't want to run into somebody in heaven that they hate or they've got issues with. So, I mean, we've had souls say to us, my ex-husband is over there, my ex-wife is over there, I don't want to run
so
into
they're
them.
So they're plenty happy just kind of staying in between.
Exactly. The other reason is, you know, the media hypes up this whole thing. They don't know that they're dead. But of all the years we've done that, I've maybe met two ghosts that didn't really accept that they were dead. Mm-hmm. And then the other reason is, yeah, they do have unfinished business. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw a ghost in our city hall here, and she was wandering the halls in her wedding dress. And so I walked over to the guard who was alive, and I said, there's a woman here walking the halls in her wedding dress. He said, oh, yeah, so many people see her. She went to the courthouse to marry her boyfriend, and he was killed in a car accident on the way to City Hall. And her soul is still waiting for him to come to City Hall.
So that trauma kind of somehow energetically locks in, and a part of him stays in that,
exactly,
that space.
Just, they stay right there.
Yeah.
I mean, Peter, I went down to Kentucky. There's a bar down in Kentucky, Bobby Mackey's Music World. And
where in Kentucky?
Lucking, Kentucky is what it's called.
Yeah, what's Lucking, it near?
Kentucky.
What's it near, Lexington or?
Oh, you know what I can tell you, because I don't really know what it's near,
okay.
But I know that they picked me up at the airport in, would it have been Cleveland or Ohio? And then, like, 20
then
minutes later,
there.
we were in Kentucky.
And in this bar.
In this bar. And there's, the bar is crawling with them. But there were these three spirits down in the basement. And I was there in probably the 90s. And there were these three spirits down there that were down there since 1892. And they're just staying there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very long, complicated story. And there's actually been books written about it and TV shows done on it. But when I said to Scott was one of the ghosts, I said, why don't you go to the other side? And he said he was afraid that they were going to be sent to hell. Mm. And I said, Scott, you've been in hell for 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
You've been here since 1892. And he, in his mind, Peter, I asked him, what year do you think this is? And he thought it was 1892.
Wow.
Yeah. So they are so, that's it. That's their reality. And they just stay there.
Now, do you ever come in contact with what like they call spirit attachments, or I guess the old word was possession? Do you have any, have any work with that, or is that part of your work too?
Yes. We have had clients who have had spirit attachments, and
is that part of a soul that is not wanting to move too far away from the earth plane, and they kind of attach to a person?
They just
attach.
And that way
they still interact with the earth.
Yep. Yeah. They don't want to go.
And is it the same thing? It's the same thing like with dealing with a ghost. It's kind of trying to help them move on.
Yes.
Yeah.
If we find an attachment, usually it's interesting because usually wherever they're attached, like at the hip, that's where a lot of them seem to attach themselves, is at the hip. And what we have found is that the soul of the living person has given them permission to kind of hitch to their wagon. And
so there's some kind of permission or symbiosis going on.
Yep. Now the conscious mind, the person, they're not conscious of that, but there's been an agreement between the souls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
that's fascinating.
Oh, it is. And then we've met, I remember this young couple up in Elk River, Minnesota, who he was a very mild-mannered young man, like wouldn't speak up for himself at all, you know, and he would become possessed all the time. If he had a beer,
oh, wow.
He would just be wide open.
Was it the same spirit?
It was a spirit who, it was really creepy, who hated women. Okay. And so they called us because this young man kept, his wife would wake up in the middle of the night and he would be trying to strangle her.
Yeah.
And she, everybody, he, his mom, the girl, the wife, everybody's like, this just isn't him.
Yeah.
What is this? So at first we didn't know what it was either, but then our guide said he opens himself wide up at night when he drinks, and then this spirit comes in, and there's this spirit who used to live in their house who hates women. And so this, okay, so then we saw the spirit that would go into him, and we asked him, why don't you just go to the other side? Why are you bothering these people? Well, he didn't like that they were living in his house, and he wanted the wife out of there. And he said that he would just have a very peaceful existence if they could get rid of the wife. So that's why he was doing this.
Wow.
So what we did was, well, it took forever, but we convinced this man to move on to the other side. And then we talked to this young man about, you've got to protect yourself. You know, if you're going to be, if your body is this sensitive to have one beer and then just kind of black out and not know what's going on, and then go to bed, try to kill your wife. I mean, it was crazy. So he said that he would stop drinking just because.
Well, Echo, our time is coming to a close. It's zipped by. So I look forward that people, our conversation's been fascinating. And so I think people can come the next time you're here in Virginia Beach or when you travel around the country and hear even more. But any final thoughts you'd like to share? Anything else that you wanted to talk about?
Oh,
anything,
Peter,
you're currently working on?
The thing that most excites me just about all of this is for people to learn about their intuition, to learn about what these abilities are, so that we can take away the fear of these gifts and the stigma around them, and you know, get them out of the category of the occult.
It seems like it's really coming into. Even on social media, there's a lot of attention about intuition and the importance of it and developing it.
Yes.
So it's nice that you're part of supporting that and helping people find their inner resources and gifts. It sounds like you were a real forerunner coming out in the 60s with all this stuff. You've had I'm sure you've had quite a journey getting here. But you just emanate joy. So I'm glad that the work that you're doing is making you so lighthearted.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I want. I want to bring it into a loving category and a fun category and some take away the fear and just help people understand their gifts.
Yeah.
Really. That's what's important to me.
Yes. Good. All right. Great talking with you. I look forward to seeing you
Thank
again
you.
Soon. Have a great rest of your day.
Bye, Peter.
Bye-bye.